This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, The Miracle and Menace of Plastic. Subscribe to The Pulse wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of the plastic that we use ends up in landfills or in our waterways. And some scientists are looking for new ways to break down that plastic. Reporter Liz Tung has more.
In 2016, Erica Erickson was a brand new biochemist, fresh off her PhD in plant biology, when she decided to spend a year volunteering with the Peace Corps. They sent her to a small village in the West African country of Guinea. Picture mud huts with thatched roofs, surrounded by unspoiled, stunning nature.
Yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous. There's very little development. And so for anyone who's an outdoor enthusiast, it was kind of a magical place.
But Erica's job wasn't to marvel at the beauty around her. She was there to think about resilient systems, which brings us to trash.
And one of my big projects there was looking at how to keep waste from ending up in all of the streams that everyone uses as their drinking water and in all of the fields.
Guinea is one of the poorest countries in the world, which means that in a lot of places, there is zero waste management. Instead, people simply dump their trash by the roadside, a major portion of which is plastic.
So in cities along the coast, it's really not uncommon to find that the dishes are full of trash. And then after a big rainstorm, that's all floated down and is covering the beach.
Further inland, plastic waste meets a different fate. When the piles get too high, people simply burn them.
I mean, the smell is horrendous, and it's also kind of unmitigated fires that are kind of burning all the time in road ditches. But more than that, the having plastic in the area that I lived in was huge. It was life-changing for the people that live there.
Life-changing because traditionally, every single item they used had to be made from scratch.
Things are constructed and made by hand or from natural resources in the area.
So when Erica said plastic had changed people's lives, I thought she meant in a bad way, that it had ruined their traditions and trashed their natural spaces. But that's not at all what she told me. In fact, she says plastic made life a lot easier, a lot better overall for people in the village.
So you could get clean water. Things that had been exorbitantly expensive supplies to get before were available at a price that people could afford. And so it was a really necessary thing, I think, for development and for bringing people's standards of living up to a place where there's less illness and a lot more comfort. But there's no real good way to deal with the aftermath of that. And so that's what I saw while I was there.
For Erica, this framed the central dilemma of plastic. As much as we might want to reduce our use, we are heavily dependent on plastic. And what's at stake isn't just straws and extra grocery bags. In some cases, it's the lives and health of people around the world. It's a big part of what pushed Erica into the work she does now at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, figuring out a way we can decrease the environmental harm of plastic rather than getting rid of it altogether. And not only that, but hopefully using the plastic that already exists to generate new renewable products. Plastic, remember, is made primarily from something we already use to make nearly every synthetic material you can think of: fossil fuels.
Plastic is highly abundant, pretty dispersed across the planet, and has a lot of really good energetic bonds in it that we can use for new products and energy that way.
Erica's lab works with a bigger group called the Bottle Consortium. They're trying to figure out a way of unlocking that stored energy, while at the same time tackling the growing problem of plastic pollution. One of the worst offenders when it comes to plastic pollution is PET, or polyethylene terephthalate. It's easier to recycle than a lot of other plastics, but there's also a ton of it out there. Here is one of Erica's colleagues, another researcher at the lab named Brandon Knott.
Erica said that this is used in a lot of single-use plastics, like your soda bottles, your water bottles, your takeout food containers. You know, they're sort of designed for a single use. They're really lightweight, so they're easier to escape out of, you know, where they should be. And they end up in the places where we don't want them, namely out in the environment.
Unless, of course, they get recycled, which can happen in one of two ways. The first is what's called mechanical recycling, which basically means the plastic gets crushed up, melted down, and then reused. The problem is, not only is the material to be recycled contaminated with dirt and other plastics which interfere with the chemistry, but also the material begins to degrade. And as a result, the recycled plastic is worse quality. It gets remade into lower-priced goods, like carpet or park benches, and eventually ends up in a landfill. As for the second big option, after mechanical recycling,
just burning the plastic. So a lot of places will take all of the waste, mostly plastic, and just burn it and use this as heat.
But what if there were a way to break plastic down to its constituent parts? Parts that would either not be harmful to the environment or could be reused to make new plastics. As it turns out, there is something that has that ability, but it's not some kind of solvent or chemical process. It's a life form called plastivores.
Individual organisms that use plastic as their primary carbon and energy source, so they can live off of nothing but plastic, which is pretty wild to think about.
In 2016, Japanese scientists discovered the first plastivores in the form of bacterium that was able to survive solely on PET bottles, which Erica says is kind of mind-blowing.
The reason I say that's kind of wild to think about is that plastic, PET was invented in the 1940s, I think early 1940s. So that's not very long for an organism to decide that that's a good, tasty meal.
The discovery kicked off an international race among scientists to identify the key to these bacteria's success, the enzymes, or proteins, that are responsible for breaking the plastic down. Since then, the research on plastivores has expanded in all directions, including the recent discovery of our very first animal plastivore, the humble waxworm. Canadian biologist Christophe Lemoyne says a European team made the discovery 3 or 4 years ago, entirely by accident.
Kind of the funny story behind that is that one of the team members is actually a beekeeper. And what happened is that she was just cleaning her hive and found some of those waxworms, put them in a plastic bag, wrap it up, put them on the kitchen counter, and a couple of hours later, the waxworm were happily sneaking their way out of the plastic bag. So that's kind of what put the waxworm on the international scene.
The big mission after that discovery was figuring out what the mystery enzyme or enzymes were that allowed the waxworms to break plastic down. Christophe, who'd been studying the effects of microplastics on animal physiology, teamed up with an insect biologist to find out how exactly waxworms were able to digest plastic. It was, in other words, a different version of the same mission other scientists have been on, zeroing in on the magic formula for breaking plastic down.
At first, our goal was to try to decipher whether or not it was the bacteria or the waxworm that was doing the stuff. So essentially trying to figure out if the bacteria was really mostly responsible for the plastic breakdown, the polyethylene breakdown, or if it was the worm.
So who gets the credit, the bacteria or the worm? In March of last year, Chris and his colleagues released a study with the beginnings of an answer. It showed that the waxworm's digestive microbes were the bigger factor in its ability to break down plastic.
But it also suggested that if you just take the microbes out of the guts, it's still not as efficient as together. So we're still pursuing that question, trying to figure out what is this synergy between the bacteria and the waxworm that allow them to really accelerate this breakdown of plastic.
The ultimate goal with all this research is to isolate the enzyme, the secret sauce, that's responsible for achieving that breakdown, improving it, and hopefully applying it on an industrial scale. Most of the scientists I talked to said we're still probably years away from making that a reality, except for one.
We are now building a demo plant, and it will be in operation in September 2021. After this, the idea is to have a first industrial plant in 2024.
That's biochemical engineer Alain Marty. He's the chief science officer for a French company called Carbios. A few months ago, they announced that they'd synthesized an enzyme capable of breaking down PET 10,000 times faster than the bacterium discovered by the Japanese scientists. Here's how Alain described the painstaking process of improving that enzyme.
I am used to say that an enzyme and its substrate is like a lock and a key. In this case, the key is the PET and the lock is the enzymes. But the lock is not perfect to receive the PET. And then my job was, with my group, to improve the lock in order to have a better affinity of the enzyme for the substrate in order to have a very, very efficient enzymes.
When they started in 2015, it took them several weeks to degrade just 2 or 3% of PET.
And nowadays, our best result is to be able to degrade 90% in 10 hours.
Not only that, they're able to break the plastic down to its constituent elements, pure enough to reform plastic of equal quality to the original. Len says Carbios already has investment from major companies like L'Oreal and Pepsi Coke. And their goal is to open recycling plants around the world, capable of handling 1 to 200,000 tons of plastic each year. Carbios may be the first, but other scientists aren't too far behind. Just a few months ago, the group Erica and Brandon are part of put out a study describing the second of two key enzymes capable of breaking PET down. For now, they're cautiously optimistic.
We should be really excited about the advances that are being made in terms of enzymes breaking down PET. But there are lots of different types of plastics, and we need solutions to recycle and upcycle all of them.
We need to develop new plastics with end of life in mind. And maybe most importantly, we need to find ways of using less plastic altogether. At the same time, we have to remember that plastic isn't just wrappers and straws and junk that we don't need. There's also clean water and basins for doing the washing. In places like the village where Erica lived, it's health and resources and hours of manpower that would all need to be replaced.
Yeah, the social aspects of this are also really important, that we can come up with new technologies, but we can't necessarily create a technology to save ourselves. We kind of have to do that from the ground up.